Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does a world of good. This isn't your average talk radio show.
Blah, 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 blah.
We're blasting away the old tried and not so true mold. Instead, TGRN turns talk into action. And action leads to doing positive things for people, our environment, and even the animals.
Well, I'm only one person. What can I do?
A lot. Join host Frankie Picasso while she turns talk into doing and gets results. This is the Good Radio Network. Yes, you can do it if you try, even if you're just a regular guy. Now, here's your host, Frankie Picasso.
Hello there, and welcome to the Good Radio Network. I am so happy to be here with you today. The sun is shining, even though it is a brisk minus 21 here where I live. My guest is not here. I'm not sure what happened to them, but I was so excited to talk about today's show with you and with him, and I'm hoping that he will show up in the next few minutes. However, I do have something else. Oh, here he is. I need to discuss with you. Just a moment. Let's see if this is him. Hello there.
Hello there, is that Frankie?
It is, Julian, hi. Welcome.
Hello, sorry.
Okay, we're just getting into the intro of the show. Good that you came.
Okay.
So you are here, this is wonderful. So I was just going to say that something very tragic happened this week. One of the projects that we sponsor, an active dog, the Museum of Compassion, Mark had 1,000 of his 5,000 paintings destroyed by weather. Somehow the weather got into the studio.
No.
Water and destroy these paintings. Mark is painting 5,500 portraits of dogs who died in shelters. And he's been doing that for 4 years. And so it's a real setback. He was five paintings away from being finished. So I'm encouraging folks to go to www.anactivedog.org and donate, buy one of the beautiful nightlights of those animals, do whatever you can to help him, get him back on track, support him. To finish this project, because that Museum of Compassion is going to be something absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah.
Wow, isn't that amazing? So today, I am so excited, again, now I'm very excited because you're here, because you are somebody, Julian, who really embodies the vision of the person I had for the show, to introduce people to folks who had an idea on how they could do or what they could do to change the world and then do it.
Yeah.
You know, you, Julian Hanford, is my guest. He's a British photographer, artist from London, England, whose work is said to be likened to you are the Annie Leibovitz of the advertising world, and your photography is absolutely stunning. You really have an eye.
I'm very honored to have that said about me, but yes, that's
it's beautiful. I mean, who wouldn't want that? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, you definitely have an eye for what the public, you know, wants and needs, and I think that your latest project is no different. It's going to be a visually stunning piece of work. It's an ambitious project that's titled Fall, and you're offering it to the world to celebrate the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. And I just want everyone, if you're listening, to, you know, give Julian a big welcome and join us in the conversation, because I think it's an important one. And welcome, Julian, to the Good Radio Network.
Thank you very much indeed, Frankie.
You know, on your website, on the photographer side of your website, your front page says, the light falls on all of us. The trick is to see it. Mm. Now, I don't know what context you meant that to be in, but I can take it today to mean that it's like it's up to all of us to act on what we see. The spotlight is
absolutely
on all of us.
I mean,
right?
I think, I mean, I'm quite philosophical with my approach to most things, and I think that line to me means that, you know, we are all very beautiful. Humanity is very beautiful, I think, and it's as those words say, it's the same light falls on all of us. But I think the more creative of us see something in that that maybe other people kind of miss sometimes.
Right.
And that's what my work is about. It's not just, I mean, the light is metaphorical because it's about ideas, really. But it's there is beauty in absolutely everything, you know. And it's just up to us as creative people to kind of see that and bring it out in that and communicate that to everybody, really.
It's amazing
that's
how
that's
a lens
kind of
helps
mission,
you do that,
really.
Isn't it?
So
I mean, you get behind a lens and you start to see textures and form and things that you don't normally, you know, see, let's say, with the naked eye as you're walking along. You don't see the beauty of it.
Yeah.
But somehow,
absolutely,
somehow you get
yeah.
behind that lens
yeah.
and you focus on something, and it's like, wow, that's really
yeah.
cool.
And the more you do it, the more you see as well. I mean, it's like drawing. I mean, I draw as well because I started out as a you know, kind of an art director and a visual artist. So I've always drawn. And actually, drawing is still a big part of what I do. Before I even go anywhere near a camera, I always sketch out what I'm doing. Just as a visual reference and just to build up the idea in my mind. So it's, I mean, I actually often approach the camera already having the image in my head and then conforming what I see through the camera to the same, you know, to the same idea that I have in my head. So it's a kind of different approach. Rather than just seeing what I see through the lens, I'm already pre-visualizing it. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Kind of
yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. Yeah, I'm an artist too, and you know, I envy those people who walk around with their pads and draw stuff because I don't.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to draw now. That's the trouble.
Yeah,
I do.
I
do. I do
it.
But I, you know.
Absolutely, I hear you, but I, you know, talk about the creative mind because I think it does take a lot of creative people to change the world. You have to be creative, but you also have
yeah.
to be, you know, I say you have to be a visionary, but you have to be an actionary, you know, a visionary who acts.
Absolutely.
And that's what
yeah,
you're
yeah,
doing
yeah.
with the fall.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what I'm doing. Yeah.
Where did this idea come? Well, let's talk about fall. Fall, tell us what
yeah.
fall is, and then we'll talk about, you know, where the idea came from, how we can all
yeah.
get involved, all of that. It's a
okay.
great conversation.
Well, Fall is it's a very huge, ambitious installation. Installation is the only word I can really use to describe it. But it's
yeah.
it, for me, it was about coming to terms with the scale of the Holocaust. What happened to, you know, in Germany between sort of 1930, well, across Europe, actually, from 1939 to 1945. And I've never been able to sort of come to terms or kind of really visualize what 6 million plus, you know, people look like. So it was, what I wanted to do was sort of approach it in terms of trying to get across the scale of it. The awe-inspiring scale of what 6 million things look like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the inspirations, I suppose, I mean, there's a lot of different inspirations that, you know, I mean, it's very difficult sometimes to pin down a particular one, but one of the images that I had in my mind was the American cemeteries in France,
mm-hmm.
where you have the rows and rows of white tombstones going on
right.
seemingly forever. And it struck me that you know, that they were similar to, you know, a similar size and shape to dominoes, you know, the little
right.
dominoes that we use to you know, to play games
yep.
with at home and to topple and that sort of thing. And I thought, what if we, you know, actually cover a huge area with 6 million of these, you know, little black dominoes, and, you know, as a symbol of the scale of what went on. And leave them, you know, let people, you know, sort of take this in for a few days, you know, to sort of just see them standing. I mean, we're talking about an area the size of a British soccer pitch, which is like, you know,
wow.
massive, great area. It's about 7,500 square meters, I think. And so you know, to start off with, you know, it's very awe-inspiring to see that block. But then on the sixth day, we even stand for six, you know, for 6 days to symbolise the 6 years of the Second World War. On
right.
the sixth day, then one person will start the topple, which it happens row after row. So it just starts with one row, goes along, comes back on itself, all the way across this huge great block, which takes about 12 hours to do.
I think that
so
12
really,
hours is what
yeah,
is
it's about, it's
the magnitude. If it takes 12 hours
yeah.
for them to topple,
yeah.
that is a humongous
yeah.
amount of time.
It does, yeah, and it really gets across the awe-inspiring scale of this thing, I think. And it's, and there's no tricks involved. Obviously, some of the, you know, traditionally people, you know, associate dominoes with these little clever things you see on YouTube where there's all sort of effects and they're going up steps and all that. There's nothing
right.
like that with this. It is just a huge block on a flat floor in a very, very large building.
How tall are your
So I think it'll be very... The regular size ones that you have at home, they're about sort of like 2 inches tall.
Oh, they're that
you know,
big?
Yeah, yeah. They're just kind of regular dominoes, you know, the sort of things
oh,
that you
okay.
buy in the shops to play
I
with.
Just envisioned,
but
you know...
But obviously ours are specially designed.
Well, yours look like a coffin.
They
or
do,
that,
yes. I mean, obviously, we've we've designed some symbolism into them to obviously make them different from you know, traditional dominoes. I mean, I call them dominoes, but they're really sort of like tiles, you know.
Right. And so who's making these tiles?
They will be manufactured especially for the event during the coming months.
Okay. And then you're working with an expert, a domino expert?
Yeah, it's a guy called Robin Weegers, who's the 23 times world record holder for domino toppling. He does it for a living.
They're only going to be
to approach, really. Two inches, just like regular, dominoes you buy for kids. Yeah.
You know, I don't know, when I look at them, I think it looks like Stonehenge or something. In the picture,
yeah.
It's like,
no, obviously, the picture I've used is larger than life size, just to get across the idea.
Awesome.
But yeah, they're just regular dominoes in terms of size, yeah.
And then what would you have to have on the floor? Like some kind of like a wood base or something that keeps it all together?
We will need to, that's one of the challenges we have with the area that we choose to do it in, which is at the moment looking like it's Berlin. We're going to have to level the floor to a great degree, which is fine.
Uh-huh.
That's the sort of thing they do for TV studio floors, you know.
Sure.
But it does mean it's an extra little thing that we have to take into account when we're doing it.
We're talking to Julian Hanford. The phone number to call in if you want to speak to us is 845-241-9943. Again, 845-241-9943. Hit the 1 so I can see you in the host queue and we can join you into the conversation if you so desire. Julian, where did the idea come from, really? Like, why does it mean so much to you to mark this day?
Okay, there's a number of different things to that. I mean, firstly, I would say as an artist, what my practice is, what made me be an artist in the first place, was a great deal of questions that I have about the way that we approach our civilization and all the kind of, you know, traditional things that we've held to be true for so long that actually don't really hold up in the light of day. So it's there's a lot of questioning about, you know, how we act as a species, really.
Right.
And that said, so that's the first grounding for that. The second is specifically the Holocaust. When I was 13 years of age, I was an army cadet in the UK, and obviously I came from a little tiny town in the west of England, so I didn't really know much about the Holocaust apart from, you know, obviously sort of like little bits and pieces. But we went on a trip to Germany for a couple of weeks, which was actually back in 1973 now. That's actually when there were still troops in Germany. There was still a large amount of British troops in Germany. And we stayed with the tank regiment for a couple of weeks. And one of the trips we went to, they took us to Belsen, Bergen-Belsen, which is in, you know, near Hamburg, and was one of the, you know, probably the most severe camps of all, I think. And as I say, I didn't, you know, it's not something in retrospect that I can say, well, I knew all about the Holocaust, so when I went to this place, I felt a certain thing. I didn't really know what to, you know, anything really much about it at all. But when we walked into this area, having walked through a glade of trees and very nice countryside, all of a sudden, everything went very still. And we walked into this area, which is now devoid of buildings. It's not like Auschwitz. They've actually knocked everything down there. So all you have is the big burial mounds, you know, and a couple of monuments and a small museum. But this area just took my breath away, because there was an atmosphere there that I've never been able to describe before in my entire life, and that I've never experienced since. Which has actually stayed with me for all these years. And it wasn't a very pleasant, you know, experience at all. And so I think the Holocaust always was at the back of my mind for, because it is, I mean, the Holocaust is
like a haunting?
Well, it's one of two things. It's either a big watershed moment in our civilization to say, hey, we really sort of need to do something about stopping what we're doing here, because it's totally wrong. Or unfortunately, it could be a precursor to things that can happen again. And it's kind of up to us, really, as a species, and as individuals as well, to remember it and not allow it to happen again. You know?
And that
goes
something
into all our daily life, you know, our attitude to other people, really.
It does. But, you know, today I went on to Genocide Watch, which is a website that if people want to go check it out, they can. It's genocidewatch.net. And there are no less than six countries in an emergency state, which they call an emergency state, is active genocide in the world right now, happening today. You know, this is going on. And it's not in the past. It's right now.
I know.
You know, when
exactly.
Rwanda
yeah.
had their genocide, everybody looked the other way. You know, and, and we can't, I mean, these atrocities are happening to other people right now. You know, and we're still looking away.
Yeah.
So how, you know.
We can't afford to do that anymore, I don't think. We have to. Each one of us has a responsibility to stand up there and be counted and actually say, I do not agree with this. Because, you know, it's so often, you know, we get cowed by our governments and, you know, other things that go on, you know, and made to feel like, you know, we're disempowered. We actually can't sort of stand up and really say, you know, I disagree with this. I think what we've got to do in the future is actually each one of us is actually going to have the bravery to sort of stand up and say, no, you know, this must not go on. I'm not going to be party to this, not on my watch, you know.
Right. You know, man's inhumanity to man, I talk about it all the time because I just can't believe it boggles my mind that, you know, of what we can do to one another in the name of whatever, you know, be it religion or you know, whatever. And I think that, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, you are the embodiment of who I was looking for as a guest on this show, because so many times people go, what, just one person? And I said, you know what? One person can do a lot. You can vote.
Oh,
you can join, you know, Genocide Watch and you know, be part of their team. You can you know, listen to shows like this and say, you know what, I got an idea and I'm going to do something, whether it's in my neighborhood, in my city, my town, my country, the world. It doesn't matter. You know, a change starts with one person. It always starts with one person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I mean, the nature of creativity itself is about doing something, is actually thinking something and thinking, this will be a good idea to do, and actually doing it. And it's, you know, so I think that's why, it is a creative act to look at these things and say, how can I make my mark on this? How can I actually sort of say to the world, you know, because I mean, I'm just one in, I don't know how many is it, 7.5 billion people on this planet. But, you know, I mean, I think it's important. So I'm going to stand up there and do my level best to, you know, to pass that information on, because I think it's important. And I think actually, I mean, particularly because at the time, you know, at the time of my life now where, you know, I've got kids and I've done a lot of things that I set out to do in the first place. Actually, what I want to do now is actually make the world a better place for the people who come after me. It's not just about me. I mean, in 30 or 40 years, I won't be here anymore, so it won't matter to me anymore. But actually, it matters to me because this world actually is, what we've got is very special. And I'm incredibly grateful for being part of the human race, because it's an amazing thing. When it's on a good day, it's an amazing thing to be.
Agreed.
What I want to do is iron out the bad bits.
Well, you know, if you can highlight them and show people, because it's not if you can no longer say I didn't know, then when you know, then you have to do something.
Absolutely, exactly.
You
you
don't know what you don't
know.
Agree. But when you know, it's you can't hide.
Yeah.
So pretty amazing. So it's a massive project with a massive bill. You need to raise, £1.5 million?
£1.5 million. Actually, do you know, I mean, the way I look at it, actually, that isn't much. You know, to actually put a message out like this into the world. It is,
yeah.
But do you know what? I mean, do you know what? Big corporations spend that on car commercials.
Oh,
every
gosh,
day.
Yeah.
You know,
when
you put it into context, actually, it's peanuts. To actually do something in the world that makes, that, you know, even if it makes, you know, a few thousand people think, wow, yeah, I want to get up and do something and actually sort of like make this different, then that is money well spent, seriously, I think.
Oh, I agree.
And it's,
I agree.
You know, it's, I'd much rather that than sort of, you know, I used to be in the advertising industry. I used to sell cars and all sorts and everything that my clients told me to. And it was good money, and I had a good lifestyle and stuff like that. But I think actually, at a certain stage, I thought, you know, God, I mean, you know, I'm blessed enough to have the gift of creativity. Why the hell am I using it to sell stuff? Should I actually be using it to actually do stuff that I believe in? And I think that's the acid test of it. And of course, it's a lot less lucrative than working in advertising, I can tell you. But that's not the point.
Welcome to the metamorphosis.
You know, it's actually. Yeah, exactly.
Peace of mind
is through, you know, using the, you know, any talents and gifts that you have, you know, I think just for the betterment of all. I mean, isn't that what it's about,
really?
I
agree. You know, I wrote a book, Midlife Mojo, and in my book it talks about the metamorphosis of when we become our true self, and it happens in midlife.
Yeah.
And there's a point in midlife where many of us wake up and go, I need to give back. I need to give.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'll tell you what, I will have to read your book now.
Thank you.
I've got it. It's on my list, definitely, because I absolutely buy into what you just said. It is about, you reach the stage, and I think, you know, having a family and kids and all that makes such a difference to that. You actually start realizing the true value of life, and it's a huge value to life. I mean, regardless of what, you know, we're taught culturally from various different points, you know, it is likely that we only have one time here, you know,
right.
I mean, depending on what you believe. And my God, you've got to make the most of it, you know. It's so special and so precious. You know?
You're using Fundy.
Yeah, it's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, you're using Fundy, Phundee.
Yeah.
And the, I believe it was the founder. What's his name? Just lost his name there.
Ashton Spooner. He's a lovely guy. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, he said that your project might be the most important one they ever do. Like, that's pretty amazing. Like, Fundy is for artists and people, creative people who are looking for, you know, crowdfunding for the people who don't know what it is. And for him to say that your project might be the most important one, that's pretty amazing.
Mm. It is pretty amazing, yeah, I love those guys to death. I mean, they're real. Ashton is a real entrepreneur in the best possible way. You know, he's a man driven by, by passion for doing something good and actually, you know, getting out there and actually sort of changing, you know, disrupting the status quo in a good way. The interesting thing about crowdfunding is, I mean, you get really silly things. I think there was one in the press a couple of months ago about, you know, a guy who sort of put this project on he wanted to crowdfund to make the perfect potato pie or something. And of course, I mean, this sort of thing, it grabs the headlines. You get big headlines about it. And I think he ended up making sort of, you know, $350,000 or something out of this crowdfunding thing, which was just a joke. He started off as a joke. And so, I mean, you know, you're always going to get stuff like that. But also, I mean, I'll tell you now, one of the reasons that I put this through the crowdfunding process, because obviously, you know, I'm also talking to corporations and companies about sort of, you know, putting their money where their mouth is and getting on board with this and funding it. But actually, I think it was really important to put it out to the people, because the people are the people, you know, are the people are the people.
You get the barometer,
who I'm
though,
trying to communicate
of the
with
public.
Here.
It's
saying to them, look, you know, if you believe this is true, put your money where your mouth is and just chip into this and help it happen. Because that's what the beauty of crowdfunding is. It is, you know, from a philanthropic point of view, it's everybody getting together behind something. It's not just the money.
Right.
It's actually the act of doing the right thing. You know,
and
saying
this is important to us. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Mm. You know, crowdfunding, the Good Radio Network itself will be starting their crowdfunding campaign very soon.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, because we go beyond talk radio. We really are there to help give money and to support projects.
Yeah.
And I really want it to be the change, more than just the voice or talking about it. You have to do it. And so you need to have money in order to do that. So we're all in the same boat. So tell me, the actual event, is that going to be November?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be November. Yeah, there's a number of reasons for that. First, I mean, obviously, you know, the obvious time to have done it would have been January the 27th, which is the symbolic sort of Holocaust Day, which is when Auschwitz was liberated first. We wouldn't have been ready for that anyway, to be honest. But I'm kind of glad in a way because, well, it's just because obviously, I mean, Auschwitz has its own ceremony, which is very, you know, somber. Where a lot of the, you know, the people who were there, well, I say a lot of the people who were there, you know, the few that are left actually go back for a service at Auschwitz. And I didn't want to really, you know, encroach on that, you know, that special in itself. Later on in the year, obviously, we're in the 70th year of the end of the Second World War, so there is going to be a lot going on this year, to, you know, to kind of celebrate VE Day and, you know, and victory in, you know, against Japan, all that kind of stuff. So actually leaving it till later in the year gives us more time to actually get all our ducks in a row, as it were, or all our dominoes in a row, I suppose. But also the fact that what we've tied it in with actually is the start of the Nuremberg trials, which happened in mid-November in 1945. So it kind of ties in with that. And it gives us space because that's not something, you know, after all the other kind of commemorations of the Second World War, ours is kind of like the one that will close the year, I think. So that's what we're aiming for.
I remember, I had this debate with my husband not that long ago because we were talking about, you know, very soon there's not going to be any survivors left, anybody who was actually in the war, knew people from the war. Yeah. And so he thought that there was a lot, there were a lot more actually left alive than we actually thought. And I can't remember what that number was, but it was a big number. It was surprising because I thought, wow, they must, you know, I know veterans every year are, I think I just read something that 400 and some odd U.S. vets die every day. In the U.S., so I mean, you know, that's pretty significant. Pretty soon, there won't be, you know, anybody to be able to tell those stories live. And
that's
like,
right.
I know that you mentioned it in your promo, and you know, it's one of the things that really irks me is the idea that there are people out there who say it never happened, who want to destroy,
Holocaust,
you know,
denial.
Destroy the truth, crazy. How can you? And somebody actually went to jail. They were teaching kids. A teacher was teaching kids, and I think it was in Alberta or Saskatchewan, somewhere, telling them that it was a hoax, that it never happened. Now, how can you, anybody in good conscience, do that? But, you know, if you're smart, how can you think this was all a big hoax? You know, history books, pictures, photographs, movies.
Yeah.
It's all there.
I think the problem was after the Second World War, that there was, it was played down quite a lot, quite more than it should have been. There's a very interesting film doing the rounds in the UK at the moment called Night Will Fall, which is available on DVD. It's directed by a guy called Andre Singer. And it's actually a documentary about the making of a documentary that was being made straight after the war. And basically what's happened, you know, during the discovery of the camps from Auschwitz onwards. Obviously, the Allied forces had film crews with them. They had actually soldiers who were trained to use cameras and stuff just to document what was going on. And they didn't really know what they were going to find in these camps anyway. But they had these film crews with them, and these film crews documented the discovery of these camps and everything that was going on in those camps, and you know, for months actually, and they sent all their rushes back to the UK, and the government set up a film unit to actually sort of look at what they could do with them. And they decided that they needed to make some sort of record and documentary of what was going on, what they found. And a guy called Sidney Bernstein, who was quite a famous Hollywood producer, was assigned to do it. And he got Alfred Hitchcock involved as the director.
Oh, wow.
And all this footage came in, miles and miles of film, which they had to go sift through and decide what they were going to do with. And they wrote, you know, they put a documentary script together and started to make film. About 5 or 6 months into this process, they'd actually finished about four-fifths of the film. And they got a call from the Foreign Office saying that you know, to actually have a meeting about it. And they said, you know, the government said, we need to shell this film, because at that stage they realised there was a problem with the Russians, and it was the start of the Cold War basically. And what they needed to do was, or they felt they needed to do, the government, was not annoy the German people. Because they wanted them on their side, so they actually shelved this whole thing, which was actually a massive documentation of what the Holocaust really meant. And I've seen some of the footage, and it's just extraordinary.
Wow.
And so this film stayed in film cans in a vault until about 15 years ago, and eventually, you know, they having a big clear out, they decided to ship. Thank God they didn't bin it. They shipped it out to the Imperial War Museum in London. And the Imperial War Museum got it and had a look at it and thought, well, actually, we should do something with this. So they actually spent 10 years restoring it and finishing off the last reel of the film. And it will be they are going to release it, a kind of limited release in London, of actually showing this film. But Night Will Fall is actually a documentary about the making of that film.
And yeah, HBO. So,
you
know,
HBO, if anybody is listening, you know, if you get the chance to see it or buy it on DVD, it's actually a very, very interesting thing, because it shows that you know, any Holocaust denier who sees that film, I cannot, you know, imagine how they could possibly have the same belief after having watched that film, because it is actually the truth. There's no, you know, it was just what they found in literal terms. And, you know, it's stuff that hasn't been seen before. It hasn't been seen for, you know, 70 years, you know.
Isn't it interesting, though, how our friends become our foes so quickly? You know, the Germans were killing the Russians.
Oh, yeah.
They were one, you know, they were killing. And then now it's like the Germans, oh, they're our friend now, and the Russians aren't.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Political expediency.
Yeah. And I love how on your site you talk about forgiveness but not forget. And when I was in Germany in September, October of this year. Mm. And, you know, there is that, the young people, they really, you know, it horrifies them. And but they don't want to be associated. Hey, it wasn't us. It was, you know, we weren't involved. Like, you can't hate me. But they're very cognizant of it. And they really, it's not like they want to distance themselves. They want to keep saying, I'm sorry. You know, I'm really sorry that this happened. And they really, truly are.
Yeah.
And so
I think the reason that they are is because the education about the Holocaust has been fairly good in Germany, obviously, over the years. They realized they had to address that issue. And, you know, the thing is about civilization, actually, is about education. If you want a society that is moral and caring, you have to, you know, the whole infrastructure has to embody that. You have to be praised for caring about people, because that's the way you learn. You look at kids, you know, I mean, you know, kids are very selfish. You know, they're born selfish. We're all born selfish in a way, because we just want what we want. We want food when we want it. We want, you know, all that kind of stuff. What we learn as we grow up is that we have to take into consideration other people. And other people's needs and wants. And actually in the best possible scenario, what we discover is that, you know, we actually, you know, the more we do that, the better it gets. And the better it gets for everybody around us, we live happier lives. And I think where it all falls down is that we forget. Yeah, it is when we sort of set ourselves up against other people and say, oh, well, you know, I'm better than them or whatever. You know, that's where it all falls apart. You know, it's, you know, to be open and you know, warm, and it's, you know, it's actually not rocket science, is it? Actually, to be honest, it's like, you know,
if you
are that kind of person, you just do that naturally. You know.
You do,
but
Julian, when that socialization process where you learn to hold back from what you want, you know, and what you need right now, and learn how to wait, you also learn to hate, and you learn, you know, you're socialized
not to like those
people, because you're not born not liking people.
Yeah.
You're not born with that, you know, discrimination as part of your nature. You know, that's taught. That's taught in your home,
in
school, or
it
wherever.
Is. Yeah.
So children. If we left them to their own devices, they play very nicely.
Yeah.
They don't care.
They do.
You know,
yeah. No, I totally agree.
Or if you've got this or that,
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and actually, I think it's only when, yeah, you're exactly right. It's actually that they listen to. I mean, children listen to their parents actually more than we think they do, particularly in the earlier years. So if they see us doing stuff that they pick up on it. They just, you know, it changes their their synapses in their brains to do what they see being done around them. You know,
for sure. I just saw a commercial the other day. It was brilliant. They had a bunch of kids, like two at a time, in a room, and they said, just sit here, and we're going to bring you a snack, and they brought two plates with lids on, and when the plates, you know, the kids took the lids off, only one child had a sandwich. And every single one split that sandwich in half and gave it to their friend, gave it to the
genius.
Other kids.
That's
they didn't
brilliant.
Even know those kids.
That is such a brilliant, you know, lesson in education. I mean, they should do that more. They really should do that more. I mean, that would change so much.
Absolutely.
If they did that, you know. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Let's
teach love.
That's a great
idea. I love that one.
You know, you know, we're teaching everybody this, and I love what you're doing. I really do. I just think it's brilliant, and I hope that everybody. I hope that Fox or somebody is going to televise this worldwide and we can all watch it happen in real time. Did you see the movie? It was a part of the Jewish Film Festival. It was Paperclips. It was quite a while ago, a couple of years back.
The name rings a bell. I can't recall it.
Grade 4 or 5 class in Chattanooga. Or just not Chattanooga, even smaller little hick town in Tennessee somewhere. And these kids... They were learning about the Holocaust. They actually put a Holocaust museum together. But they couldn't envision 4 million. And so their teacher told them to reach out and get paper clips from people.
Yes, I have heard of that. Yes, I have. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of kinesthetic learning is absolutely essential, I think. You know, actually sort of, it's, you know, don't just tell, show. You know, show is so important. The visual aspects of things is one of those things that often in education is actually lost because everybody learns to write and do math and all that kind of stuff. And there isn't so much, you know, quite so much emphasis put on the visual side of things. But visual is very powerful. It really is.
It's very powerful. And with so many different learning styles, you know, people learn by touch, they learn by seeing, they learn by reading, and everybody learns differently. But you cannot deny the power of you know, those dominoes taking 12 hours to fall. You can't deny that.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
That is massive.
Yeah, that will stay in people's, people who dip into it and see that, I think that will stay in their minds for quite a long time, I think, which is the intention, of course.
For sure. And every one of those, you know, is a face, is somebody that was loved and that was born and that died at the hands of, you know, of a really horrific regime. I mean, it's just, man, that the video. Did you put that together?
I was going to come on to that. Yes, we did. Yeah.
Part of
our intention for this was really to, obviously, because the overarching intention of what we're trying to do here is to reframe the Holocaust. And what I mean by that is that, of course, I mean, the Holocaust, you know, I mean, it's 70 years now, you know, that there's been, you know, a lot of information, documentaries about it over the years. Often in these cases, you know, history becomes a bit tired. You know, the memory of it becomes a bit tired. It becomes a bit, well, you know, people think, oh, I know about the Holocaust. You know, I don't really need to know any more about it. It doesn't actually mean anything emotionally anymore. And I think one of the main things that we wanted to do was actually to reinvest it with emotion, because emotion actually is one of the things that makes us learn the most. You know, if we feel something about something, we will remember it. You know, it's much, much more about feeling. So aside from the domino thing, in the build-up to the domino thing, to actually sort of get it out, the message out to as many people as possible, I thought that one of the best things we could do was to actually release a commemorative single and video, music video, to actually go with it, which in itself is sort of like, you know, I mean, I don't think there's many Holocaust organizations who would actually think that way, but there's a good reason for that, because most of them are very established and they're, you know, they are... in a way, and I don't mean this in any derogatory way, but they're kind of a bit stuck in the way way that they view it. And what I wanted to do was actually do something for new generations that actually reinvested it with emotion. So the idea of doing a very sensitively done music piece it's actually a familiar song, and the reason we chose a familiar song again was a because actually it really fits very well, bizarrely enough, but also it's also because it's already a known piece but done in a different way, it even more underscores the it's something that there is a familiarity there already that people can grasp hold of. The track is actually Mad World, which was a British track by the band Tears for Fears, which was released in 1981-82. That was an electronic version. It was completely different. The context was different. But what we did was re-recorded it in a way, with a singer, a very young singer, who happens to be my daughter, in fact.
Oh, is
Aurelia
your daughter?
She's my daughter. She's been singing.
Oh, wow. I was going, who is she?
Vastly talented, much more talented than I am.
She is
and,
talented. We're going to play that.
Very talented.
Right now. Let's play
Please. Yeah, we'll talk about it afterwards.
It's 4 minutes. I don't know if I'll play the whole 4 minutes, but we'll give it a good two.
Yeah.
How's that? Okay, here we go.
No worries.
This is Mad World Gone Mad, sung by
Mad World.
Mad World, yes.
By Aurelia Hanford.
And she's 13 years old.
She's
Brilliant.
13 years old.
Wow.
Thank you.
So this is being released on 26th?
Which is next Thursday,
And it's just a single, or is there more music to go with it?
It's at this stage, it's just a single, it is obviously very tied in with what we're doing here. Also a music video that goes with it. We've cut, the music video, I will send you a link to that so you can put it on
the
site.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
It is very moving, actually. But basically what we did was we used archive footage, which tells the story over the 4 minutes of the Holocaust, right from the time when the rise of the Third Reich, right the way through Kristallnacht, the ghetto, the persecution, the ghettos, the eventual shipment to the camps, and the eventual, Holocaust. So it doesn't pull... it's done in a very sensitive way, but it doesn't pull too many punches, because I'm very aware that really we need to be honest about what we're doing here. It's one of those things that I don't want to ram it down people's throats, but I want people to be, in this world we need to be kind of honest about what happened. Too much in news coverage and stuff like that. The news edit out what they think we shouldn't see. And,
right.
You know, that's wrong in a way, because actually, you know, we are grown-up people. You know, if we don't want to sort of like, you know, I mean, you know, if we don't want to see these things, that's fine. But, you know, we shouldn't edit out, you know, the things that go on in the world. We need to confront them as a human species and deal with
right.
them. You know, we're grown-ups. We're not kids really anymore.
Right.
So I'm
interested to know what Aurelia
feels
like.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Yeah. I know. I wanted to know about what
Aurelia.
Your daughter. Yeah, what does she think
Aurelia
of that?
Aurelia, obviously, for the first thing I would say is Aurelia has to deal with an artist as a father, which is never an easy thing for a 13-year-old to deal with. To be honest, she has to get used to the fact that I now wear top hats and things.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I know where you stand.
Aurelia is you know, I'm very proud of her anyway. But she has a twin brother. There's two of them.
Oh, I got one of those.
And they're both fantastic kids. And they're both very mature. I mean, they understand exactly what I'm doing. You know, obviously she's been party to all of this throughout, and she's entirely behind it because you know she can see. Yeah, I think, I mean, the reason that I, you know, apart from obviously the fact that she's got a beautiful voice, the reason, when you actually see the video, you'll see that, because she's in the video. I mean, basically what we did, we edited together this archive story of the Holocaust, and then what we did was we projected it back onto a moving sheet in the studio with a fan on it, and her stood in front of it singing, so it's all projected over her.
Like
which brings a whole different
her.
Dimension to her. Yeah.
The image of her on
so
the front.
Yeah.
I just
so
wanted to say that the image of her on
does,
the front. Uh-huh.
Well, she stood in front of the sheet, actually singing to camera, and we've projected the whole thing over her and onto the sheet as
right.
well.
Right. Yeah, no,
so,
that's exciting.
So what it does... Well, yeah, what it does in the video actually is that it brings back that emotional element because there's a real person, even though you know
right.
it's archive footage that you know a lot of people are familiar with. It's all black and white in you know just you know standard archive footage. But the fact that she's you know kind of mixed in with it and she's a contemporary young girl brings
right.
An emotional dimension to it that I wasn't expecting myself until we actually finished it. And I mean in the edit suite when we sort of like you know we first put the footage together, I just had to walk out because I was just so emotionally moved by it. And I think if you know other people are half as moved as I was that day when the first time they see it, then it will have done its work. Do you know what I mean?
But when you look at her face, you know, the cover of the CD or the single that
yeah.
you have the poster of her, she has that look of almost like the girl in Les Mis, you know? She could have been replaced
yeah.
there. She has that
well, you know
classic
what? Do you know what? She,
look.
She is the same age as Anne Frank was when Anne Frank went into hiding.
Right, right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Anne Frank obviously is one of the stories that epitomizes, I think, and most humanizes what those people went through. Aurelia is now the same age as Anne Frank was when she had to went into hiding. Yeah.
You know, I know that I touched on this with you before about my uncle.
Hmm.
My uncle Max, who is going to be 102 in May, and is very very
amazing.
Active. Actively sought out.
Yeah.
This is what amazes me. He is actively sought out and so busy, at least 3-4 days a week, teaching about the Holocaust.
Yeah.
People, for, you know, teachers and colleges, and he travels, you know,
that's
back
great.
And forth across Europe to discuss it and talk to people and hold conversations about it. Like, I was really surprised that so many people wanted to know about it. Really?
Yeah. And I think particularly
by
somebody who has actually experienced it. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And
I really want to meet Max.
Yeah.
I
really want to meet
Max.
He's a
fascinating
guy. I'm going to go out of my way in the next few months to get over there and actually meet Max because he sounds amazing. And we are actually starting to interview a lot of survivors as part of what we're doing. Because obviously Fall is not just about the domino event. It's actually a movement towards a greater sort of educational understanding. And that's what we're going to continue to do after Fall is finished. So, yeah, a lot of the people that are involved in it, we're going to be interviewing while we still can, you know.
Right.
And getting their thoughts and getting their feelings and you know, not just about their experience, but what their life's been about since. How that experience has sort of, you know, influenced how they live their lives now, you know, and whether it still has its mark on them or whether it's changed their opinions about life, whatever, you know.
Right.
That's important.
I mean, visually, the mark is always there because they have the tattoo, right?
Yeah.
All of them have a tattoo
course.
On their
yeah.
arm. Yeah, so that doesn't go away. But
no.
you know, I think for some people, it they're strengthened. You know, I mean, you get through six of those camps. I mean, you're man, you're bad.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. It's well, the old what's the old saying? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger,
makes
and
you
it's
stronger.
True. It does. If
yeah.
you get through that stuff, then you become quite a special person. I think. You know?
Like it just amazes me how normal he is. it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm really really champing at the bit to meet him. Actually, you're gonna have to set it up for me, definitely.
I will.
I really want to meet him.
That'd
be fantastic.
It's pretty cool. I just, you know, again, Julian Hanford, we're speaking to Julian Hanford. He's an artist, photographer, filmmaker now, and visual artist in a big way, in an epic way, with Fall, which will be coming, you think in Berlin you're going to do it?
It's, Berlin, later this year. But it's an ongoing campaign from now as we kind of raise the awareness of it and raise the money for it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So how is it? How long has the campaign been going on for? When did you start?
We launch it next week officially. I mean, obviously there's been a lot going on behind the scenes to work out, but we start it next week. Yeah, 26th. Basically, and it's an international campaign. It's, you know, it's not just the UK. It's obviously because it's, you know, it needs to be pan international. We've got lots of initiatives. Obviously, you know, the main thing is to raise the money that we need to do. But we'll be doing a lot of viral things in terms of raising the awareness of it. And also, you can buy a T-shirt. We're selling full T-shirts, which I'm wearing at the moment. It looks fantastic.
Yeah,
which again, just, you know, I mean, the whole point of doing that is not just to sell T-shirts, but also to
get
the
word, communicate.
Because, yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So where can people
and
go
also,
right now
and
to
also
buy
you
this?
Can buy the single. The single,
right.
the single
yeah,
will be on
sale.
Yeah, the single will be on sale on iTunes and Amazon from the 26th onwards. It's called Mad World by Aurelia. That's Aurelia spelled AURELIA. Yeah. And obviously, you can see the video for free on YouTube as well.
I am going to officially right now extend my hand to you and make you one of my projects, one of the Good Radio Network projects this year. So you can, you'll be under us, under our umbrella. And so I will make sure to let everybody know about the CD on February 26th to go there and purchase it.
Fantastic.
And let's go to your website and buy some T-shirts. And what is that?
Yeah.
Where do you want them to go?
Oh, the actual T-shirt thing isn't up yet, but it will be in the next few days. The site for reference is www.fall15.com. So it's www.fall15.com.
You know,
the crowdfunding site, which will take the campaign itself, is www.fundy.com, which is spelled phundee.com.
For those who are listening and maybe didn't catch it, and I don't know, I can't remember if we even mentioned this, but the Holocaust isn't just about 6 million Jews being killed. You know, it's disabled people. It was gypsies. It was Poles. It was Russians. It was Catholics. It was a lot. Homosexuals were targeted. One of the sites that really affected me. I was just in Europe in October, and we were in Budapest, and on the side of the Danube, there's an art.
Hello. Hello, can you hear me, Frankie? The line's gone a bit funny. Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, sorry, you disappeared for a second there, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Carry on.
Yeah. So, no, I was, I don't know if you heard, but this art display of the boots, that, you know, the Nazis had made the people take off the shoes.
Oh, you mean the piles of shoes and boots and stuff? Hello? Sorry, this line's getting really bad. Can you hear me? I think we may have a transatlantic problem happening. Hello?
Can you hear me now? Uh-oh. Okay.
A little bit, yes. Yeah, carry on.
Okay. Well, maybe...
Hello? Sorry, I can hardly hear you now. Do you want me to ring back in? So I try again ringing back in to get a different line. Hello? Frankie? Hello? Hello, Frankie? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello, hello?
Okay, I think
hello, sorry,
really
yeah. It's, yeah, do you want me to ring in straight away again?
You know what? We've got 4 minutes left.
Line.
It's yeah, only got
okay.
4 minutes left. So we'll just get
okay.
to the edit there. And I thank you, Julian Hinn, for the work with my guest today. And please go and visit his site. Please donate, because this is a really important project. And I highly encourage you. And I'm so happy.
Yeah. Thank you. I think, I mean, as well as donate, be part of it, you know. Carry these things in your heart going forward. For everybody, I think, is the most important thing. We can make a difference. You know, we're the only people who can make a difference to the world, really. Every one of us. Hello? Hello? Hello, Frankie? I'm losing you.